Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is Wilp's Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Lori Hoyt, and Dick Paddock is our co-host and intrepid engineer. And we're here every Friday morning from 7:30 to 8 o'clock to hope to, on your way to work or to wake up, to give you some of the important news of the day, the kind of news that you don't get on the major media. A lot of this will be local and some of it community and national. So today, before we're going to have a guest, Michelle Cotton-Laws, who's here, who's fighting traffic and will be here shortly. But in the meantime, we have a couple of important announcements. This one is, I think, very important to many people. The Mental Health Association in Orange County is offering pro bono counseling to fill the gap in mental health services created in recent years by the failed state reform efforts and the state budget cuts. The program matches potential clients with therapists at reduced fees. This is so needed in this community because the regular fees for most people are, let's face it, out of line for them. Individuals who either have no insurance or whose insurance does not adequately cover therapy should contact Mark Sullivan at 919-942-8083, extension 4. There's also an email, let me see, MSULLIVAN, that's really for Mark Sullivan, at MHAORANGECO, orangecounty.org. So this is such a needed thing, and I'm so delighted to hear that the Mental Health Association is really filling in the gap, and the therapists who are volunteering to see potential clients at reduced fees. So it's a real community effort that we take care of each other and support each other, which is what we want in the community. It's not just a place to live, but it's a place to be in a supportive environment. And that just really makes, as I'm a retired therapist, and I'm so delighted to see that. Back to some WILF things. WILF being the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILPF. Celebrating Jane Addams' birthday this fall marks the 150th anniversary of Jane Addams' birth and the 10th anniversary of UN Security Council Resolution 1325. Jane Addams, I think many of you know from school or whatever, was one of the hero women who was a social activist. She was very innovative, and she's one of the founders of WILF, so we particularly honor her. To mark this historic occasion, WILF is launching a special project designed to bolster women's active engagement in conflict resolution and prevention. The new Advancing Women as Peacemakers, AWP project, will educate citizens on the history of women as peacemakers. So this is what Jane Addams is probably, with many other accomplishments, best known for, and how WILF got started as a peacemaker during the First World War, going when it was very dangerous because of torpedoes across the waters to Europe and meeting with sisters from other countries and trying desperately to stop the carnage, the bloodshed of the First World War. And there were sisters there from opposing nations, but they were there with a common purpose, to stop the killing of their sons and husbands and fathers and brothers. as we know, sadly, they were not successful, but they felt that this effort was so important that they wanted to keep meeting and keep working and educating people that there are other ways to end conflict besides killing each other. And so that's the beginning of WILF, which is in our country, it's national, but it's also international. So we just wanted to let you know about that. And our guest, Michelle Cotton-Laws, has just come in. And I'm just going to make one other announcement here, that on this Monday, August 9th, from 4:45 to 5:30, it's a Nagasaki Day Vigil. It's a commemoration of when we dropped the atom bombs, and I guess one was a plutonium bomb, so long ago that we do not forget, that we realize we've got to have a nuclear-free world. And that will be in Chapel Hill at the Peace and Justice Plaza, the downtown Chapel Hill Post Office. And the question is a world without nuclear weapons possible? Bring appropriate signs. This is sponsored by the Elders for Peace. So I hope a lot of you will be there. Candles are always appropriate. And commemorate that. Good morning, Michelle.
Well, good morning, Lori.
Very happy to see you.
Good to be here.
And we invited Michelle to come back. She was here last week, and so much is going on with the NAACP and with the continuing struggle for civil rights and equality for our citizens. And Michelle, half an hour was not enough time. We had, at the end, we're rushing through and trying to get, so we thought, let's get back to all of these most important subjects today and have a little bit more time to expand on them and not rush you through. It's good to see you, Michelle.
It's good to be here. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah. So last week, Michelle was talking about the Wake County school boards, that new school board, trying to undo the diversity policy. Should we start there, or is another place you want to start?
Well, I think for the most part, I feel that we did cover cover what was going on in Wake, and we were getting ready to, I think, at least I would have liked to have been able to kind of broaden that a little bit,
yes,
to talk about the importance of making sure that we have equity in all of our school districts, and in particularly here in Chapel Hill, Carrboro City School District. You know, we fight very hard and work very closely, I think, with the school board and with the school administration to do just that, to ensure that all children in the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools are treated fairly, are treated with there's equity in terms of classroom instruction, parents, making sure that parents feel, all parents feel welcomed and understand their critical role in terms of the educational success of their children. And so I'm concerned a little bit about what's going on in Wake County with the elimination of the diversity policy, because it can send a message throughout the rest of the state that it's okay, that it's okay to move in that direction. And the motto that we've adopted for the resegregation movement in our schools is forwards ever, backwards never. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want to go back to a time when Plessy v. Ferguson was the acceptable law of the land, when by de jure as well as de facto it was okay, it was practiced and upheld, practiced in society and upheld in the courts. And so we're hoping that with this pushback against what's going on in Wake County, that people understand that this isn't policy that's good for anyone, not just that it's bad for African Americans or Hispanic and Latino who happen to be among the poor members of our populations within our cities and towns, but it's bad for white kids too. And I thank you for bringing that point out.
Yeah.
When kids are in school environments, school settings, and they don't have contact with other kids from other cultures, it really debilitates their level of growth as well in terms of being global citizens. And when we think about this move for globalization, push towards rush, I would say, towards globalization and our role as the United States as a world leader, it's going to be important that we have responsible citizens coming out of our school districts that understand the value of other people.
And are comfortable with other people. You know, I think of some of these privileged white kids, it's like living in a bubble and being insulated from what the real world is.
Right.
And you're right, it's a deprivation for all, because all the kids need to know each other. And I think the other thing we were talking about at the end of the program last week, it's coming back to me now, is how in Wake County there is segregation by housing.
Right.
That's not totally, or the case here in Chapel Hill Carborough, it's more within the school and within classes for the gifted or talented, and that there's that kind of segregation going on that you're working to address.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. People may remember that earlier in the year we held a press conference down at Lincoln Center, which is the school administration building, to send a message that as we look to expand the honors courses, the school board had just voted, and it was split, interestingly, by race on the school board. So all the three black school board members voted against it, and the four white school board members were in favor of it. And I think there was this misperception that we were against honors, that we were classes, that we were against the higher, more rigorous courses, and that was not the case.
Mm-hmm.
What we were against was moving full speed ahead with that expansion without first being able to understand and identify the reasons why many of those classes were very homogeneous in terms of race.
Mm-hmm.
You had mostly white and Asian students in the top tier courses, and you still do level classes in our school district. And if you look at the lower tier or level courses and look at some of the EC, exceptional children, in particular the BEH courses, you will find that those classes are also homogeneous, but in the other way, on the other side, in the other direction, with African Americans largely filling those seats. And so so we wanted and the school board and school district recognized that we needed to figure out what was going on, and it can't just go back to this meritocracy theory. Well,
yeah,
kids are where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
We know that there are structural things going on, the way teachers respond to the expectations that they may have of certain kids. And
I want to just make a point, because that really gets to the allocation of resources. And what I found particularly sad and disheartening, at the same time they're talking about having these honors courses, which is going to take some extra money, and then at the same time they're talking about cutting out teachers' aides for third graders.
Right.
And this is where it's critical that the children get a good foundation.
Exactly.
And that's where, to me, the greater resources needs to be with the children who need it the most, not for those who have so many extra resources with wealthy parents or all kinds of extracurricular activities that a working class or poorer person can't afford. And it just seemed to me like a really unfair allocation of resources when they were doing that.
Absolutely. And I recall a conversation in the last school board meeting where Jamzetta Bedford courageously and I think wisely pointed out that there seems to be this belief that all of the resources are going towards addressing the achievement gap and to work with kids, low-performing students, when that is not the case.
That's right.
And so we need to be mindful of the messages also that the school that we're sending out in this, as we have this discourse mm-hmm. back and forth about performance and about how to bring kids up mm-hmm. and not create a situation where we're pitting groups against each other.
Yes.
But where we are dealing with and putting our resources where they're needed the most. Mm-hmm. And I've always said to the school board, we can't take too much credit in this school district for the wonderful success that we have, that we see students have competing at the national scholastic level, getting all of these honors and recognition, because many of the students that we're talking about would have done well in any school district.
Yes.
And it's based on mm-hmm. not so much what we've done here. And so I think sometimes we take undue credit, the school districts takes undue credit. The true measure of how successful we are educating kids is not how we continue to cushion and help those at the top who have the resources and who, like I said, will do well no matter where they are, but it is how we lift those at the bottom. Can you bring those few kids up mm-hmm. from the bottom? And that's really the true measure, I think, of our success. And it's difficult because you're talking about kids that come with a myriad of complicated situations. Parents, parental involvement issue, which I argue is across the board. I go to school board meetings. I don't see any parents in there, to tell you the truth, uh-huh. unless there's a hot button issue yeah. that's related to them. And so this whole notion, well, if we can get parents more involved, well, I don't see any of them at the school board meetings. I volunteer in the schools, and I do see more white parents in the schools, but as I talk to them, many of them don't work. And so, or they work in jobs that in which they're the boss. And that's not the case for many of our African American parents
whites.
Here and many whites. That's exactly right. Hispanic and Latino.
A working mother in a lot of jobs, it's very hard to get time off even for a doctor's appointment,
right.
let alone to say I'm going to volunteer every week or whenever in the schools. And that's an unfair comparison.
Almost definitely.
Yeah.
So my position, Lori, has been that even if parents don't show up, now, I understand this is not in any way minimizing the role that parents play in the education of children. But even if parents don't show up at our school mm-hmm. doors to help facilitate the educational process of their child or children, we have professionals whose job is to do nothing more than to educate children.
Exactly.
And if you can't do your job without relying on the parents to be there, then I suggest that you go back and you get more training.
Yes.
Because there are some parents who will never be there, but you still have an obligation in my mind to educate these kids that come into your classrooms. One of my best friends is Kim Farrington. She won Teacher of the Year. We grew up together. Our moms were friends and pregnant together at the same time. Well, her birthday is in August. Mine is in June. And we've talked about this. And
yeah.
I love her, not because she's only just a wonderful person and I love her, but I love her because of her philosophy about teaching and about education. And she complains every year, I'm going to get out of this, but she doesn't, and I pray that she doesn't. She teaches at Carrboro, which was a very difficult school at one point. No, Carrboro Elementary.
Elementary.
And so she said to me once, when these kids come to me, they're mine the entire
yes.
time, I don't care what has happened before they got there.
That's right.
I'm responsible for them. And she takes her job so seriously. And she said, sometimes I do have to play the role of a social worker. Mm-hmm. I have to comb kids' hair. There was one child, she was saying, that used to come in and you could tell had not been given the proper attention in terms of grooming. And so they had, the child had somewhat of a smell, and she brought clothes in for this child. She would take the child into the bathroom, change the child's clothes, underclothes, and so forth, and send the child back out into the classroom setting, because she understood that children know, and they are aware of when they do these comparisons with other kids of what they have and what they don't have, and that can prevent them from learning.
I hope we can keep Kim in our schools. We're going to take a break for a minute, a station break. We're WCOM FM, local low power station, which I hope all of you will support. We rely on volunteers, and this is your voice in the community, and we're so privileged to have this opportunity to bring guests like Michelle for her voice to be heard in the community. I just also want to mention that we are blessed to have an underwriter, Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street. You can find out more about it. These days everybody does it this way, internationalistbooks.org, but I recommend the old-fashioned way. Go on down to 405 West Franklin Street and see for yourself, because it's not only a bookstore that has books that you're not going to get in the big box stores, but it's also a community resource place. You can find out a lot that's going on in the progressive community. And I just want to remind you again that this is Wilps Wake Up Call, and you can find out more about us at trianglewilpf.org. And don't forget the P in Wilpf. That's P for peace, and that's important. And now I want to, Dick, have I remembered everything?
We need to remind people that if they want to find an old radio show that they want to hear again, they can find it at the trianglewilpf.org website in our radio archive.
Yes, and even though they may have been from a few weeks or a few months ago, most of the things we cover are pretty ongoing issues that would be well worthwhile to do that. And now back to our guest, Michelle, my sister, Wilf sister, and an NAACP sister.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy to have you back, because education is the most critical issue. If we want to make changes in these long-standing divisions in our society, it is helping the kids who are having a struggle, putting the resources there, because they are capable of so much. And I strongly feel that particularly those early grades is where it's do or die. If they get to be good readers, you know, in third grade, that's going to help them all through school. But if they start faltering, that's where there's going to be difficulties. What grade does your friend Kim teach?
She teaches third grade now.
Yeah, it's
kindergarten.
Critical grade.
Mm-hmm. She taught kindergarten. Actually, she may be back at kindergarten. She's taught kindergarten and third grade.
And that's what the foundation is
almost
laid.
Almost definitely.
Those early grades to see if they love school or afraid of school.
Yeah, that's right. And so you mentioned in terms of early education. We can't forget our preschoolers and Head Start.
That's
I
right.
think Head Start was a wonderful program that we really should push at the federal level to get cranking again like it was back in the 70s.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people who have been successful were products of Head Start.
Yeah.
I know I attended a program at University Baptist. I was one of two blacks that was at University Baptist daycare, preschool there. And so, you know, so my mom reminds me that all my life I was in school. And so, and then she goes further and she's like, and you were often, you know, the only child, you know, only student or one of a few. And so, but that's a whole nother conversation.
It's another whole program about
how
critical that is, and about Head Start, which all the studies have shown that it has made a difference.
Right.
But okay.
So what I want to say, as I know, I wish Wilf had an hour, because there's so much.
Well, you know what? We're going to be having a new time, we're hoping, and have an hour program, and you will be invited back whenever you can come.
Because everybody knows how much I love to talk.
I'm right. I can go on and on and on. Right? Well, once I get cranking, once I get here, I can start going in.
But I want to say, I want to announce two things. One. And that is the National NAACP with a host of other partners, LULAC, and there's a labor organization, educators, have pulled together what is going to be another, I think, historic show demonstration of the true American ethos, and that is one that respects diversity, mm-hmm. and one that understands that we are a wealthy nation who can afford to take care of, and we need to be in the business of taking care of those who are the least among us. And so there's a movement that has begun, and it will culminate into a march and rally, mass demonstration actually, on October the 2nd in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
And we need all organizations. I don't care who you represent, as long as it's progressive, as long as it's about lifting us up as a nation, mm-hmm. and uniting us and not dividing us. Mm-hmm. We need all hands on deck, and we need everyone to participate in that. It's One Nation, One Dream movement. It's the One Nation, One Dream. And it's a lot of ways. It's resistance to and standing up against some of the racist factions that have come out of the Tea Party movement, mm-hmm. and some of the negative and vitriolic discourse that we are being bombarded with these days. It's to show everyone that that's not who we are, that unfortunately a minority has been able to capture the airwaves and the television waves, and has dominated for the last year or so with this very divisive, segregationist, non-productive speech and rhetoric and messages. And so I won't start naming folk, but we surely know there are enough people to name, from Bachman to Palin to other folk, Rush Limbaugh to Glenn Beck and other people. But so I'm inviting people, please, 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 please check out our website in the next week. We're supposed to get the final stuff from National.
Your website is
www.chapelhill-carborough-naacp.org. Let me do that again. www.chapelhill-carborough-naacp. That was hard. .org, because I wanted to give the national, which is www.naacp.org.
So that'll be a little easier.
Yeah, right. And so that was in my head. But either of those will work. And we are encouraging people to sign on. There will be buses leaving from North Carolina.
Okay.
And we really need everyone. We want this to be a multicultural, multi-contextual, multi-issues focused movement. So jobs, education, housing, unemployment issues, which goes with the jobs issue and the economy, peace and talking about, the fact that we cannot continue
having our resources off with endless wars.
Most definitely.
Instead of for the people. We have 30 seconds. Michelle, it's been lovely having you here.
Thank you. One
last word. I guess maybe want to repeat that.
Sure.
The National is the easiest.
The National is the easiest. Although I was on there this morning talking to Reverend Barber, which is, our days seem to end late and start really early these days. But so www.chapelhill-carborough-naacp.org. We're asking you also to join us as members, but you can also go there to find out about events, and then www.naacp.org.
And we'll see you next week. And if we're still on, trianglewilp.org is where you can find out about us. Goodbye.
Goodbye, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Yes.